We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Beaver Sports Podcast, brought to you by Hom Kombucha. It's feel good, taste good kombucha, packed with probiotics and boosted with B12 vitamins. Brewed in Bend, Oregon for Beaver Nation. Here are your hosts, Mike Parker and John Warren.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Beaver Sports Podcast. I'm John Warren, along with Mike Parker. The Beaver Sports Podcast is brought to you by Hom Kombucha, handcrafted with love in Bend for Beaver Nation. Fizzy, delicious, made with antioxidants, probiotics, and all organic ingredients. Hom Kombucha. Well, Mike and I had a chance not long ago to sit down with Pat Casey, former Oregon State baseball coach, baseball legend, if you will, not only locally but on the national level for all he has done here in the Pacific Northwest, with winning 3 national championships and all those trips to Omaha. Pat Casey, on this particular podcast, on our local program in Corvallis, we got into a lot of things, including way back when he started the program. In fact, growing up in Newburgh as an athlete and in a very athletic family in Newburgh, and a whole bunch of other things. So sit back and relax and enjoy this conversation that we had with former Beaver coach Pat Casey on baseball. And we start out by asking Pat if he had a chance to hear any of the interviews that we had done, because we had a chance to speak with some of his former players from that 2018 championship team, and in particular Nick Madrigal, for one. And Pat said, yeah, he's heard some of it, but not all of it.
You're right. They mean the world to me. Well, I was blessed to have the opportunity to be part of something that, you know, even when I first got here, we probably never dreamed would exist and last as long as it has. And, you know, that's one of the things I'm the most proud of, is from the time that we became a conference in the sport of baseball in 99 through 2018, that no team in the country, no program in the country was better. And so that's all those guys that have called in, all those guys that have talked to you, the guy running the program now, the guys that are coaching with him now, you know, all those guys are the reason behind that. So it's a fun time to talk about it.
Pat Casey joining us. Pat, when you jokingly say you've been so busy, but what have you been doing, Pat? I mean, the family time, I assume, has been really precious for you and some great time. Susan was telling me earlier today, what have your last couple of months been looking like?
Well, I've been pretty much following all the mandates by the government, you know, doing everything I'm told. I got myself a whole bunch of masks and walk around the house thinking about what I need to do next to make sure that I stay out of trouble, you know. I've been doing what everybody else has been doing. You know, I've been watching a lot of baseball games. You know, Jonathan, you know, he pulls up all the World Series games. I've seen, you know, it was really strange to me because I've never sat down and watched the World Series games. I've watched a lot of pieces of it, a lot of highlights. But when you're coaching and you're scouting other people, especially during the World Series, you don't watch your own team. And then when you come back, you certainly don't really sit down and play it over. So it's kind of, that's been neat. I sat down and actually watch a baseball game and watch, you know, watch our club and all the things that that they did. And it's, that part's been really good. And done other things too, you know, been out trying to help people that I can and, you know, doing some things like that. But it's time, you know, now that we've gone through this and taken a lot of precautions that we needed to take, you know, and then now we need to take the next step and we need to get out and start moving around.
What's it been like for you, Pat, while watching them? I mean, for prolonged periods of time, do you catch yourself reminiscing or do you catch yourself going, why did I make that call?
All of that, you know, all of that. I laugh, you know, I see things happen and, you know, just, it's all, you know, interesting to watch and see and the dynamics of everything and knowing some of the things that were going on behind the scenes that, you know, a lot of people wouldn't know, you know, whether it was somebody who was injured, whether somebody's, you know, not playing well, whether somebody's, you know, struggling. I mean, there's just so many things that I thought about that were just beyond the outcome of the game. And, you know, Omaha itself, you know, Mike and I talk about that quite a bit and the things that go on around the World Series and how you handle them as a coach and how your players handle those players and places you can go and the times you, 1 year we have an unbelievable amount of time off, another year we don't really have any time off. So just things like that. You know, you think about those things and you think about how you got into that situation. And for me, just the things that we preach the most, and that is how little things win big games and how many little things went into winning, you know, championships.
Pat, when you say you've kind of watched the World Series games almost from start to finish for the first time in a long time, does that include tomorrow in this time slot? The Joe Beaver Show goes away and we're playing game three from 2006 and the winner-take-all title game. Have you watched that one in particular, the first national championship game from start to finish?
Absolutely. And, you know, I watched it on, you know, Jonathan, he watches them all. He's got them all on. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you call that little Roku or some damn thing like that, you know, and so he can pop up any game he wants. But the game was on ESPNU,
yeah,
2006 championship game. And so I watched it on there, and, you know, it was funny. I texted Mitch. I said, hey, man, I got you on the tube right now. You just hit a ball off your foot. You handled it pretty good, you know. And so that you know, like I said, that game was intense. You know, you were there. We were exhausted. But I like I said, again, I marveled at the little things we did to win that game. I mean, there were so many little things that happened in that game, both on the offensive part of the game and on the defensive part of the game, that we did to beat two guys coming in first rounders. You know, one thing that's overlooked, I think we only struck out twice in that entire game against Bard and Miller. And I think the guy's name was Horvis or something like that. He was the closer, and that's pretty amazing. And, you know, we moved runners, Tyler Graham around in third, and seeing the ball, the overthrow, and reacting as quickly as he did mm-hmm. on Rao's bunt. So just, you know, little things like that were impressive to me. I kind of laugh when they shine in the dugout sometimes because some of the things that they think happen in the dugout that don't happen, some of the things that don't happen that do happen. Right. So, I mean, you know, when you're in there all the time, you know all those things and you feel it, and it's it didn't seem like it was that far long ago, that's for sure.
I was just going to say, what do you think then when you're listening to the guys, especially the analysis by the, you know, former Major League guys on how they analyze your players? Do you pretty much agree with them or say, he's way off on that one?
Well, you know, they got a lot of answers when it's kind of funny, you know, they're doing their job. But, I mean, you know, they got a lot of they have a lot of knowledge that they don't have. You know what I mean? It's we know who can do what. We know who's got rest, who doesn't. When you make the right decision or not, that is usually dictated by whether the guy has success or not. But, you know, I heard a few times about, hey, you know, they got to be going to get Nickerson right now. Well, you know, we really didn't have a lot of options, and Nickerson was pretty good. And, he was a pretty honest guy. He knew what he could do and what he couldn't do. Whether we should bunt or not bunt, whether we should run or not run. And, you know, just things like that kind of, you know, they just have to do their job. But, I mean, I thought they did a pretty good job. They always do. But, you know, I think coaches in general, flip on the World Series and find out who's coming out of the bullpen to win Game 7. It's Randy Johnson. It's Curt Schilling. It's you name it. You know, it's you don't play in championship caliber tournaments to say, okay, let's figure out what we're going to do next week. You know, it's completely different. And so, anyway, sometimes I think that they're calling a game, and we've been with them for 60 games, so we've got a pretty good feel of what we need to do. But no, they did a good job. I think it's all good.
Hey, Pat, maybe when you say things happening in the dugout, I've heard this story. I've not asked Dallas about it. Spence kind of told me about it. Did you observe the dynamic with respect to that game of Dallas the great Dallas Buck pacing in front of Spence, and Spence finally saying something to the effect, what's wrong? What do you want? And Dallas says, I want to go in. Put me in. Well, get your cleats on and warm up then. I mean, that's kind of how Spence has told it. It's just such a great, great game to me in the respect that Jonah, Dallas, and Gundy were all so vital parts of that first championship. To me, that's a great storyline in that game. But you remember Dallas essentially saying, I'm going into this game.
Well, a couple things happened. Dallas wanted to go in every game, but you know, if we needed a hitter, he wanted to hit. You know, and of course, he was a great competitor. But obviously, I saw him pacing around, and I know he had some conversation with Spence. And I don't know what was said between them, but because you know, when we're on offense, that's the time for the pitching coach that he gets the opportunity to, you know, go down, talk to the pitcher, you talk to people that may be getting up, talk to the catcher, you know, find out how things are going. And, you know, Spencer always made really good decisions as to when he had a good feel, you know, hey, we've got to make a change here. He did a great job with that. I thought, you know, bringing Eddie in the game, you know, he thought that might be a better decision than I thought. And that might have been the only thing we were talking about, because Eddie had struggled a little bit, and I kind of liked Perp a little bit, and he was good, but he'd just thrown. So, I mean, there was things like that, but I do remember having a discussion, and I do remember Buck walking by me, and his shoes were untied. And he said, I'm going to the bullpen. And he said, I'm going to the bullpen. And I said, for what? And he said, because you're going to need me. I said, you know, I just looked at kind of whatever, man. You know, Buck was going to do what he wanted to do anyway. Fortunately for us, he did go down the bullpen. And, you know, he's the guy that talks about that he really didn't have a good World Series. You know, he pitched plenty good enough against North Carolina in the first game in order to keep us in striking distance. And, you know, obviously against Miami, first game he wasn't very sharp. But that, you know, that happens to anybody. I mean, we wouldn't be in the World Series if it wasn't Dallas Buck. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, he had won 11 the previous year, 12 that year. And just to see, I mean, he got some big outs in that championship game. But you, in the end, you called upon Kevin again, and the great Kevin Gunderson as well. And Gundy, you had made the decision after your amazing rally. You're down 5-0 and rally for 7. Bill Rowe's 3-run homer gives you the lead. Was it at that point, Pat, that you and Dan decided we're up on him now and we're going to slam? I mean, you'd already brought Gundy in as if to say, we're getting back in this thing now, and you wrote him for quite a ways in that game, and then he bulldogged his way back in the final game, too. Just an unbelievable performance.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing that you don't know is, you know, here's the thing that is always interesting to me when people have, you know, decide, oh, God, you know, well, now you want to take Gundy out. You know, well, what they don't understand sometimes is what happens if you do take him out and you got to go get two other guys. How's that going to affect tomorrow night? You know, and so once we felt like there was no question we were playing game three, it really wasn't a matter whether Gundy pitched another 10 pitches or another inning or anything. It was, you know, what kind of position are we going to be in tomorrow night? And so, you know, I think Gunderson threw about five and a third, I think. Didn't walk anybody. I can remember that. Didn't really strike anybody out. Gave up a couple. I know he gave up a home run, and he gave up two runs, I think, in that game. Game two, obviously. And then in game three, you know, Gundy had to come in and get two outs, and he did. And so, you know, there's just a lot of things that go into why you leave a guy or why you don't. It doesn't come down to, like I said, like, you know, I was always a big guy that if you played a split series, so you play a three-game series, you know, how do you win two games? Well, you know, the very first thing you have to do is understand how to stay out of your bullpen on Friday night. You know, that's just all there is to it. And how do you stay out of your bullpen? You play defense and you pitch. And so it's the same thing, you know, when you get to the next series and so on. Well, when you get to the College World Series and you have two games to play, you know, nothing matters. It doesn't matter if you're a starter or reliever. It doesn't matter if you're a first baseman and you got a bond. It doesn't, you know, none of those things matter. And so it didn't matter that Gundy was the closer. He was going to pitch until, you know, we decided that he wasn't, or he decided he wasn't. And at that point in time, whether he throws five pitches or five innings, didn't matter. We had to win two games, and we needed to find a way to do it. And we didn't have to have, you know, there's no baseball book that tells you how to win games. It's the guys that uni up and go out and get it done. And, you know, you ask Gundy, hey, you want to go 4 1/3? You want to go 5? You know, he's going to go, come on, coach, we got to win this. You know, and so whether he was available on the next night or not wasn't on our mind, or what our mind was to stay out of our bullpen and come out fresh the next night and be able to have everybody available that was available.
Yeah, and he did. He closed it as he did so many times with the final outs. Pat, the thing, too, that I wondered about, when you said you watch the games and see all, quote, the little things or the small things we did to win a game or games through all your teams through all the years, it's probably a disrespectful term to say little things or small things about what I'm about to say, because they're not. They're a huge part of what you did in your program. But it looked to me at times in that series that your ability to get a bunt down and move runners and put pressure on the defense by getting bunts down on North Carolina helped swing that series a bit, didn't it? I mean, your ability to do that and their inability to handle your short game was a key factor in winning a championship.
Well, of course. You know, I mean, the one thing, you know, if you have more than one way to beat your opponent, then you can use those in times when your opponent isn't able to handle whatever you do. And they could not defend on the corners. They moved guys around to try to get better offensively, and so we decided, well, bunt the first now. They moved him to first, you know. Mm-hmm. They just did not handle the short game, so we used it to the best of our ability. Heck, Billy Rowell laid down a drag bunt. Kunda laid down a nice push bunt. Graham laid down a nice bunt. You know, we just tried to make sure that we were diverse enough that there's more than one way to beat your opponent, and in that particular game, they gave us the opportunity to, really play the short game. And we stole three bases. We didn't think they held runners very good. But I think it's the little things. You know, if you look at the first play of the game, Kunda makes an unbelievable play. And, you know, typically the first play of the game is your guy going to be locked in, ready to go. I think it was even the first pitch. And he makes an unbelievable play. If that guy gets on, you know, maybe they try to do something early and get on the board. The play that McFeely made at the plate, and then Canham tagging and looking for the next play, and then Kuhn to stand in a second where he's supposed to be in a one-throw rundown. Mm-hmm. Those little things win big games. And we like I said, there's games, you know, when we're down 5-0, we need to smash our way out of it, and we were able to do that as well. So, you know, proud of the guys. That team was really, I mean, if you look at who's on the field, very, very athletic people on the field. Very, very athletic people on the field. You just go around the diamond, you know, Shea McFeely was a really good athlete, and he might be the only guy that someone would say, you know, other than your first baseman, you might say, hey, you know, he was McFeely, because everybody knew Barney and Graham and, you know, Canham, and all those guys were very, very cool. We're all really athletic, but Shea was a good athlete, too. So we could move. We were mobile. We were versatile. We had a lot of weapons. You know, we had good starting pitching. We were okay in the bullpen, had a great closer. But we had big courage, man. We had big will. We had big fight, and that's a big part of it.
And tomorrow at noon, the 2006 title game will be played. It'll be replayed again on Saturday as part of Beaver Classics. And there are so many, Pat. We fixated a lot on the 06 game because that's sort of up next in our queue. Tomorrow at this time, that game will be playing on the air and the radio call, and it's still one of the more delightful moments I've ever had on the earth, and I'm grateful for that. I want to jump ahead a little bit now to some of the conversations we've been having on different matters, including yourself, Pat, as a three-sport athlete in high school. And you know, we were talking about great athletes in the history of the state, and one thing that I don't think we've ever talked about much publicly, did you have a shot late? Could you have? I mean, what was there interest for you in D1 football? I mean, were you getting some look? You played in the Shrine game, didn't you? And wasn't there an opportunity kind of coming late to you maybe to go play college football?
There was. You know, back then you didn't have cell phones and computers to know who was playing everywhere in the state and dial into that stuff. And we were playing in the Coast Valley League, which was the largest classification at the time. It was AAA, but hell, I didn't really know who was in, you know, at Grant High School or whatever it is. So, yeah, I got selected for the Shrine game and went up there. And, you know, after the Shrine game, you know, I was getting, I didn't know I could run and ran a really good time and ended up being the most valuable player in the game. And so, of course, then all of a sudden I could play football, you know. So that's kind of funny. But, yeah, I did. And I don't know. My dad really felt like that he would rather see me play baseball, thought that there was a chance to play at the next level with that. I still kind of wanted to play basketball. And so, I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed football and basketball way more than I enjoyed baseball in high school because, you know, I mean, it rained all the time. You didn't have the facilities you have now. You didn't have some of the ways to keep the games going. There was no fans. So, you know, I was never really overly intrigued about going on and playing football, I don't think, until after that particular the Shrine game. And it was late, so I don't know. It just – I wasn't overly, I guess, motivated for a whole lot of things back then as far as thinking outside the box, you know. I just kind of decided that. But as a matter of fact, Kruger kind of talked to me, a guy named Bill Kruger, who was in McMinnville, and said, hey, you know, you can play basketball and baseball up here at Portland U. Why don't you come up to Portland U? Mm-hmm. And so my coach, my high school coach who went there, he also recommended that. I actually decided to go to school there after they decided school. So, you know, I was a little late getting going.
Did Ainge play in the Shrine game, the football game, Danny Ainge?
No.
Oh, okay.
He did not.
Would you agree with me, Pat, that Ainge was the greatest athlete to come out of the state of Oregon?
Well, I'll tell you what, John, he's certainly one of them. I don't know what was happening in the 30s and the 40s, but I'm sure there were some great athletes. That class in particular, the class I was in, 1977, if you think about that, Danny Ainge, Ray Bloom, Mark Radford, Jeff Stout. You could go on and on and on and on about the athletes in that particular class, but you probably couldn't find a better. I mean, I'm sure I'm going to insult some athlete out there if I say he's the greatest athlete, but I mean, here's a guy that played in the NBA at a very, very high level as an All-Star, got championship rings. was drafted in professional baseball, was, I think, an all-state football player. I don't know. He certainly was one of the greatest athletes to ever come out of this state. I there's no question about that. Who the greatest one is, I have no idea.
It wasn't Mike Parker. You're right. That's for sure. And I was a class of 76, so I was a 1 year.
I know it. You were south, so I didn't get that. Cottage Grove's a long way away.
Yes,
I don't get down that far.
Did you ever compete against Ainge in anything?
Nothing. Okay. Never competed against him in anything.
Gotcha.
I never did. Like I said, back then it was a lot different, and yeah. I don't know. It was just a lot different.
Now, the other thing we've been talking about, Pat, and I wondered if The Last Dance has crossed your television, the Jordan documentary, and if so, because when I think of competitive people, you are the first person that comes to mind. I've been around you and have just been amazed by how competitive you are, and yet Jordan has this reputation at his level. I'm wondering if you've watched it, and if so, what your thoughts are about it.
Well, I've watched every second of it.
Okay.
And I really have a lot of respect for his passion, his desire, his will. And he says some things in there that are absolutely true. Some guys are afraid to go out and challenge a player on your club because you want to be liked. Some guys are afraid that somebody's not going to like you. And I think it's hard for some people that aren't in the arena to understand what it means to win at all costs. I think they think, he doesn't care about people. He doesn't care about family. Whether he does or he doesn't, I don't know. I just know those are separate things. In other words, when you're in the arena, your family ain't in there with you. And you can have the same love, passion for your family, for your friends, for your faith, and still want to cut somebody's throat when you're in the arena. And I think that there's nothing wrong with that. I think that he opens up, hopefully, some guys' eyes that are sitting around watching some things like that, saying, wow, this guy could have just, making millions of dollars, could have just showed up, could have easily said, hey, 4 rings is enough, 5 rings is enough, could have easily showed up and been an all-star. But no, he's going to challenge each and every one of them to the point that you can't even look at the guy because that if you don't do it right, he's going to be in your grill. His particular lifestyle in certain other areas, people can take that for what they want. I'm not a guy that's going to judge him for what he did or didn't do. When he says it's hard to be Michael Jordan, I think that's hard for people to understand because they say, oh, he had everything he wanted. No, people don't realize what it's like when you put expectations on yourself and then other people live on those expectations, the demands you put on yourself, how hard it is to play or coach. And that's one of the problems with coaching is you when you put expectations on yourself, you feel like you're carrying those for the rest of the guys in your program, or you feel like you're carrying them on your shoulders against anybody. It's like it's personal. It's like, I could feel it. You don't care about having a friend when you're coaching against him. When the game's over, different story, man. Shake your hand, walk off. But during the game, no, there's no friendship. There's no love for your opponent. I mean, that's when they start tearing scoreboards down and they don't count who wins and find out how many people show up in the stands. People want to see you show up to win, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think sometimes it's taken out of context when somebody is that competitive that they're maybe not a good person or that they don't do things right or they don't care about this or that, and I think that's become a big excuse. Hey, we're under 500 every year, but, we got great kids. Well, you can have great kids and win, too, and so I think that hopefully shed some light on competitiveness and not that everything's done right when you're over competitive, but not every decision he made. He even says that, hey man, I was wrong. I punched one of my own players in practice. I was wrong. I called him. I apologized. So, if you're really, really competitive, you don't do everything right. That's for sure.
Yeah.
If you're not very, very competitive, and you shouldn't then you're never doing anything right by playing, because there are things you can do that you don't have to get in the arena, and that's everybody's individual choice. But you know, life's a competition. You know, life is competitive. We're going through a tough time right now, and competitive people right now are probably people that have a brighter outlook than people that maybe aren't quite as competitive. And you know, I believe when they say you run the race to win, and you tow it up, you uni up to win, and you make some mistakes when you do that too. Don't get me wrong, I've made plenty of mistakes, and most of those come from being over competitive, and even with your own players, man. You know, sometimes you challenge guys when they give you your best effort, and you mature, you learn, you make mistakes, you always wish you did everything right, but you don't. And athletics is an unbelievable opportunity, especially when you're part of a team, to find out what it means to excel for one another and to give up for one another and to, you know, learn how to go through tough times. And I've seen guys chest up in the dugout during the game that loved one another. Thought it was pretty good, man. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, so last thing and a quick follow-up. Can competitive nature amongst teammates, I understand amongst the team you're playing, it's not kissy-kissy, but can competitive nature in-house go too far? As a coach, did you ever kind of have to say to one star, hey, back off, that's your teammate, and I'll be the coach, you be the player? Did you ever have to have that attitude?
No, I don't know. I think there's times when, Phil Jackson kicked Michael Jordan out of practice for slugging Steve Kerr, you know? And so I do think that, you know, that here's the deal about players and coaches in general. You know, everybody talks about family, and I want to know any family that doesn't have a little bit of a scuffle once in a while, a little bit of disagreement, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Hell, if everything is smooth, you know, I got to see that one, because that's not the way it is. You know, if you're challenging one another to become the best, you want to be the best, you should be challenging your teammate. You know, I mean, I love it when guys make other players better. You know, you're looking at people like, Andy Armstrong. Mm-hmm. You know, here's the guy playing behind Nick Madrigal and Kane Grenier. He helped them become better because the little guy thought he could really, really play, and he really, really stuck his nose in there. And it is what it is, man. And people push one another. And that's one of the things about that 18 club that was so special. I always told the elite players, you know, you're running around with Larnick and Rutch and Grenier and Madrigal. And I said, you know what? When you make the guys that aren't the elite players feel like they're as important as you, you watch what you do to our team, and you watch what's going to happen to them in the future, and you watch what they're going to become. You're forging the way of their future by treating them like they're as good as you are. And they did. And guess what? In game two in the Arkansas City, we had to play every guy on our roster. Yes. Every position guy had to play. And you know what? Every one of them thought they could play. So yeah. I'm okay, you know, as long as somebody doesn't get their nose broke in practice. And there's a little, you know, Nick and Grenier, they'd always chat at one another kind of aggressively, mm-hmm. a little bit. I don't know. And you got to let them play. And, you know, all the geniuses sit back and evaluate, and all the other guys get in and do their work, you know. And I never had it all figured out, I can tell you that. I'm sure there's times I should have stepped in. I'm sure there's times I should have stepped out. What I do know is that players, they're the ones that win the championships. And coaches just got to be smart enough to understand when you let them ride and when you pull it back, you know. And, those are things that you learn, man. And you learn who it is. You learn who they are. They learn who you are. But if they don't trust you, you're never going to win. I don't care how good you are. I don't care. They don't trust you, or you don't trust them. It's a hard, hard time. And so I think the guys trusted Michael Jordan, as he is the dude. And this guy, he might rub me wrong. I might not like him. I might go home and tell my wife, I can't stand Michael Jordan. He's the most arrogant SOB. But guess what? Man, my ring is huge. You know, my ring is huge. We are winners. And so I don't I hope people don't take it wrong when he said win at all costs. I really think he's talking about in practice and in the game, not that we would cheat or not that we would go out of bounds or, you know. And, man, the guy's pretty good.
Hey, Pat, thank you so much for time today. I wanted we're out of it for now. I hope that we can connect again. I hope, above all, I mean, your family, you've been able to spend good time with them. It's a sad bit of news to me that Ellie, your daughter, had a wedding planned for August 1st. That is, and she speaks, I think, if you could just share, that's had to be put on, in a sense, not so much the wedding, but anyway, what can you share us about that? And how's John handling? You're watching a lot of games together, but I felt for him through this whole time. So how's your family, Ellie and John in particular, doing through all of this?
Oh, they're doing great. Ellie's a strong young lady, and you know, her and Alex will figure out how that works. We obviously would love to have the wedding when it's scheduled. I think it was August 1st, and that doesn't appear that can happen, but there will be a wedding. There will be a time when we can all get together and celebrate, whether that's at a wedding or whether that's at a celebration afterwards. There's no question that that's going to work out because of who she is, you know. And Jonathan, now he wants to talk to Governor Brown, you know. He thinks this thing should be opened up right now, and he's ready to roll. And he comes up and he updates me every morning on what's going on. And he saw every, you know, he could probably tell you more about the World Series games than I could. I took him golfing one day, and that was fun. And he's ready to roll, man. He's ready to cheer on the Beavs. He's ready to roll. And as a matter of fact, him and Ellie are together right now. So
excellent.
Blessed with a great family. You know that.
Yeah.
Great wife. Great family. And like I said, I want to say that I really feel for Ellie, but I also know her strength and what she will do and how that'll turn out. It's going to turn out great. And that's the way it is, man. It's the challenge she's got, and she'll handle it wonderful.
Pat, we love you, man. Thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks,
a
Pat.
Lot of time. We appreciate it. Hope we can do it again down the road. It's always great talking to you, Coach. Miss you. Say hi to your whole family for us, and we'll see you soon, I hope. Thanks, Pat.
Back at you, man. Love you too, guys. See ya.
Thank you.
Former Oregon State baseball legendary coach Pat Casey joining us here on the program. The Beaver Sports Podcast is brought to you in part by Visit Corvallis. Experience Beaver game day fun in Corvallis. Extend your stay and take in all the Willamette Valley has to offer. Visit Corvallis. Come for the game, stay to play. And let's keep crossing our fingers and hoping that this all comes back so we can visit Corvallis coming up this fall for football. And lacrosse boots, done right since 1897. We'll do it again next week. Thanks for joining us today on the Beaver Sports Podcast from Learfield, IMG College.
This has been the Beaver Sports Podcast, brought to you by Hom Kombucha. It's feel good, taste good kombucha, packed with probiotics and boosted with B12 vitamins. Brewed in Bend, Oregon for Beaver Nation. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Beaver Sports Network.